Hello, and welcome to episode number 59 of the Point of Convergence podcast. As always, I am your host, Exoacademian. Over the last several episodes, we've been discussing some of the more bizarre, even absurd elements of the UFO phenomenon. For anyone who's taken the time to do a truly deep dive into the data behind this phenomenon, it is clear there is much to make sense of here, much that doesn't fit well with certain cookie-cutter, predetermined hypotheses meant to make sense of the data. Two episodes ago, we discussed Jacques Vallée's groundbreaking, genre-stretching, and controversial book, Passport to Magonia, From Folklore to Flying Saucers, where Vallée drew our attention to parallels between elements of the so-called UFO phenomenon and events from both religious history and historic fairy lore. Beyond somewhat superficial differences, the overlap is clear. And in our last episode, we dove directly into an investigation of the absurd or ridiculous nature of many of these encounters with supposed aliens. While we should always be wary of anthropocentric notions of how supposed space aliens should behave, it is difficult to look past the overwhelming degree of absurdity in many of these encounters. Are they merely so strange because we cannot make heads or tails of the actions of a much more sophisticated intelligence or species whose rationality supersedes our own? Or are the events themselves simply absurd, full stop? Following up on his exhaustive study of the data we've covered over the last couple of episodes, Vallée, along with his colleague physicist Eric Davis, published a position paper titled Incommensurability, Orthodoxy, and the Physics of High Strangeness, a six-layer model for anomalous phenomena, in which they lay out the challenges that confront us in trying to study a phenomenon that is so rich in elements of high strangeness and paranormality. This paper, though only totaling 9 pages, is rich in detail, touching on many of the key elements that anyone studying this phenomenon should be paying close attention to. Beyond presenting these elements in a clear and concise manner, this paper by Vallée and Davis also makes clear many of the misguided assumptions that various researchers make in trying to pin down the ultimate origin and nature of the apparent intelligence behind the mind-bending activity associated with the UFO phenomenon, while also proposing the broad brushstrokes of a way forward, utilizing a multi-pronged and multidisciplinary approach. A deep dive into the informative and insightful nature of this paper by Jacques Vallée and Eric Davis is the topic of this, the 59th episode of the Point of Convergence podcast. As we begin this week's episode, let's just touch base on who these two figures are, the authors of this position paper. We all know Jacques Vallée. He's probably been talked about on this podcast more so than anyone else, and by a wide margin. Eric Davis is also a key player in the UFO phenomenon, and has been for a very long time. Because he has so many clearances, he has probably seen more of the top secret data pertaining to the UFO phenomenon than anyone else, or as much as anyone else, certainly. And Davis has also been on the record saying some very interesting and informative things about UFOs and what the government knows about them. Davis, who currently works for the defense contractor Aerospace Corporation, has said before that we couldn't make these ourselves, or something to that effect, regarding the nature of the materials that have been recovered. Davis also gave a classified briefing to the Defense Department regarding the matter of crash retrievals of UFOs. And he was quoted as saying these are, quote, off-world vehicles not made on this earth, unquote. And by the way, that's a quote from the New York Times article published in July of 2020 by Leslie Kane and Ralph Blumenthal. I bring these matters to your attention to make the point that these two figures, Jacques Vallée and Eric Davis, are exactly the kind of people we should be listening closely to regarding how we should study this phenomenon and what's been discovered so far in attempting to study and make heads or tails of this phenomenon. They know as much of the data as anyone on the planet. All right, let's jump right into this paper again titled Incommensurability, Orthodoxy, and the Physics of High Strangeness, a six-layer model for anomalous phenomena. We begin by talking about the challenge of high strangeness. Quoting from this paper, quote, "The rational study of reported cases of unidentified aerial phenomena, UAP, including religious apparitions such as the so-called Miracles of Fatima and other Mariel events, is currently at an impasse. This situation has as much to do with the incomplete state of our models of physical reality as it does with the complexity of the data." Unquote. Now, that's important right from the get-go. So they're already bringing into the picture not just sightings of UFOs / UAP, as they're often referred to now, especially in government circles, but they're also bringing in so-called religious events or events that have been interpreted as religious in nature, such as the Miracles of Fatima, the Miracle of the Sun, that happened in 1917 in Portugal. So already we're seeing the full breadth of the kind of data they're including as part of the UFO phenomenon. And there's also a sentence right at the beginning there, the second sentence indeed, that I want to draw your attention to. Again, they say, quote, "This situation has as much to do with the incomplete state of our models of physical reality as it does with the complexity of the data," unquote. And I say, hear, hear, absolutely, that's something we should pay attention to. That's what this phenomenon should be telling us. The data, when we look at it, should be telling us that our current models are incomplete, insufficient, perhaps even a fair bit off base. How else can these things be happening? And yet we know they are. So let's keep that in mind as we continue. Getting back to the paper, quote, "A primary objection of the reality of UAP events among scientists is that witnesses consistently report objects whose seemingly absurd behavior cannot possibly be related to actual phenomena, even under extreme conditions. In that respect, the similarity is striking between contemporary events reported as UFO close encounters and the more traditional observations of entities described as angels, elves, and fairies or deities," unquote. So again, this is ironic here in a way, because rather than looking at the data and pursuing it from a scientific point of view, what Vallée and Davis are pointing out here is that many skeptics, many of those who are in the scientific mainstream, refuse to even look at this phenomenon, look at the data, because they assume a priori that it is too absurd to be possible. Again, they say here it cannot possibly be related to actual phenomena. Again, that's a very unscientific way to proceed. Again, we're assuming our model of reality is correct, and because that's the case, these things can't happen, supposedly. And yet they are. So this highlights the extreme prejudice that currently exists in the scientific mainstream, which has prevented dedicated ongoing research on a broad basis. That's problem number one. Notice here that Vallée and Davis also draw our attention again to the similarity between many of the elements reported by experiencers and witnesses and historic fairy lore, what was reported by people in history. Of course, modern people don't generally think of these fairy tales as real, as based on actual events. They think they're playful, made-up stories. And yet the irony is, many of the elements are exactly the same. And contemporary human beings tend to dismiss both of them, meaning narratives regarding the UFO phenomenon and fairy lore, merely because of the nature of the elements themselves, namely that they are too absurd to be taken seriously. All right, getting back to the paper, quote, "Skeptics insist that superior beings, celestial ambassadors, or intelligent extraterrestrial visitors simply would not perpetuate such antics as are reported in the literature. This argument can be criticized as an anthropocentric, self-selected observation resulting from our own limited viewpoint as 21st century Homo sapiens trying to draw conclusions about the nature of the universe. Nonetheless, the high strangeness of many reports and the absurdity attending religious miracles must be acknowledged," unquote. So again, the preposterous response from skeptics is that this isn't how such beings would behave, as if we would know that, as if we have any way of judging accurately how such beings should behave, when by definition, they are not human beings, they're not anything we're familiar with. They're either superior extraterrestrial intelligence, supposedly, or even celestial ambassadors, spiritual angels and whatnot. How would we know how such beings would behave? And that's the point that Valet and Davis are making here. This is an anthropocentric, self-selected observation resulting from our own limited viewpoint as 21st century Homo sapiens. That's the point they make. And it's a good point. It's not only that we demonstrate an anthropocentric bias, but we do so specifically from a 21st century Homo sapien perspective, what looks reasonable to us, which again is absurd in itself that we would think that we can tell these others how they should behave if it is in fact extraterrestrial intelligence or celestial ambassadors of some sort. The bottom line is we do not know how such beings would behave, and we shouldn't project our assumptions, our biases, our prejudices onto the data. We should look at the data and go from there. So far we've covered a couple important points. Number one, the UFO phenomenon data may be revealing to us the clear lack of true understanding we have as to the ultimate nature of reality. And number two, it is prejudice and bias that prevents the scientific community, who should be the ones looking into this, from even taking it seriously to begin with. So shame on the scientific community, the mainstream, and Valet and Davis have made that point clearly. But they're not done with their critique of various human groups. Next, they're going to talk about ufologists, those who do propose the extraterrestrial hypothesis as a way to make sense of this data. Quoting again from this paper, quote, "Advocates of UAP reality, on the other hand, generally claim that the extraterrestrial hypothesis, ETH, centered on interstellar travelers from extrasolar systems visiting the Earth, remains the most likely explanation for the objects and the entities associated with them. Accordingly, they would reinterpret biblical stories and religious apparitions in the framework of visits from space aliens. This argument, too, can be challenged on the basis of the witness's own testimony. Ufologists have consistently ignored or minimized reports of seemingly absurd behaviors that contradict the ETH by selectively extracting data that best fits their agenda or version of the theory. Thus, the ETH, just like the skeptical argument, is based on anthropocentric self-selection. Here we are witnessing an interesting overlap between the SETI and UAP paradigms. Each excludes consideration of the other when laying claim to the legitimate search for and contact with potential non-human intelligence," unquote. So again, a really key paragraph. And Valet and Davis make the point that those who would support the extraterrestrial hypothesis, those who would want to put that forward to the scientific community as a way to make sense of this data, also show their own bias, their own prejudice, their own unscientific behavior by excluding parts of the data that don't fit well with their hypothesis. And of course, that's not a scientific nor objective way to proceed. Whenever absurdity raises its ugly head, ufologists will just delete those aspects of the data and try and only put forward the elements that fit well with the idea that these are space aliens traveling in spacecraft across the vast expanse of interstellar space. All right, getting back to the paper, quote, "In the view of the authors, current hypotheses are not strange enough to explain the facts of the phenomenon, and the debate suffers from a lack of scientific information. Indeed, from the viewpoint of modern physics, our cosmic neighborhood could encompass other parallel universes, extraspatial dimensions, and other time-like dimensions beyond the common four-dimensional space-time we recognize. And such aspects could lead to rational explanations for apparently incomprehensible behaviors on the part of entities emerging into our perceived continuum. As it attempts to reconcile theory with observed properties of elementary particles and with discoveries at the frontiers of cosmology, modern physics suggests that mankind has not yet discovered all of the universe's facets, and we must propose new theories and experiments in order to explore these undiscovered facets. This is why continuing study of reported anomalous events is important. It may provide us with an existence theorem for new models of physical reality. Unquote. And by the way, that last sentence is highlighted. It's in boldface and italics in the paper. And again, I couldn't agree more. When I think back on my study of this phenomenon, that's where I land, that we must reconsider our very model of reality, that this data is providing a unique opportunity, in some ways unlike any other body of data in the world, to posit new ways of thinking about all that is, what is the ultimate fabric of reality. And Valle and Davis were saying the very same thing. This should be seen as an opportunity, a gift, and yet, because of prejudice, both by ufologists and the scientific mainstream, it's largely either ignored or pigeonholed into a pre-existing hypothesis like the extraterrestrial hypothesis. And also what Valle and Davis are saying in that section we just read from is that the cutting-edge notions coming out of quantum physics and coming out of cosmology suggest that there could actually be means by which real things are happening that would look absurd, but actually are not once you understand it from the right perspective. So again, this highlights all the more why it is so illogical, irrational, and unscientific to dismiss this data from the get-go merely because it looks absurd at first blush. All right, now I'd like to jump back into the paper, moving forward to a section where they discuss in more detail this anthropocentric bias in both SETI and the UAP paradigms. Quoting again from this paper, quote, "The anthropocentric biases in the SETI program are evident in the present search paradigm. Historically, the founders of SETI defined the search paradigm from a series of complex arguments and assumptions that led to the creation of a SETI orthodox view of interstellar communication while applying the assumption of mediocrity to our known present technological capabilities. This approach was predicated on the notion that it was economically cheaper and technologically easier to generate and receive radio wave photons for interstellar signaling rather than engage manned interstellar travel or robotic probes. Indeed, the latter was considered economically and technologically improbable within the SETI orthodox view. This has led to four decades of the SETI program following a dominantly radio microwave-oriented search scheme. Given the failure of this initial approach, in the last two decades, alternative SETI programs have been proposed. They exploit coherent laser optical, holographic signals, and worldwide web detection schemes, as well as ideas to search for ETI artifacts, SETA, or astroarchaeology, and visiting probes in the solar system or on Earth. There are new proposed search schemes based on the application of high-energy physics detection, such as modulated neutrino beams, X-rays, gamma rays, and cosmic rays, etc. Other search schemes propose looking for artificially generated excess radiation emissions from astronomical bodies in space or for high-energy radiation starship exhaust trails." Unquote. Now, the bottom line in that entire section is that the SETI program has focused largely on radio signals, which was the technology that was cutting edge for the Earth, again, speaking of anthropocentric bias and bias to a particular period of time, that was a key aspect of our technology in the 1960s and 70s. By the time you got to the 80s, 90s, and the turn of the millennium, radio signals seemed like an antiquated way to try and pick up evidence of extraterrestrial civilizations, and yet that's largely been the paradigm. Now, getting back to the paper again, quote, "These new programs have been at odds with members of the dominant RMW SETI program, possibly because of concern over having to share scarce resources or compete with other non-RMW programs for the very limited private funding available for overall SETI research." unquote. And the bottom line there is that while there are different ideas, there's actually relatively little funding to actually look into this. And so that creates even more aggravation amongst many groups in terms of what is the right way to move forward. And so we tend to stick with what we've been doing all along. Okay, now they're going to focus their critique again on UAP researchers. Quoting again from the paper, quote, "The community of UAP researchers is also driven by its own orthodoxy, which is only violated at great personal risk to the critic who proposes a deviant view, and by its own principle of mediocrity when attempting to categorize and hypothesize explanations for the phenomenon. For this reason, we prefer to use the term UAP rather than the more common UFO, which is immediately associated with the idea of space visitors in the mind of the public and media. Yet a bridge could be formed between the disparate SETI and ufology communities if both would only recognize a simple fact. No experiment can distinguish between phenomena manifested by visiting interstellar, arbitrarily advanced ETI, and intelligent entities that may exist near Earth within a parallel universe or in different dimensions, or who are terrestrial time travelers," unquote. And this is a really key section, again, in the paper itself. This is highlighted in bold text and it's italicized. Let's focus on this for a second. What they're saying is, interestingly, at present, there's no experiment we can think up that would be able to distinguish between phenomena that could be either visiting interstellar groups, ETI, or intelligent entities that may exist near Earth but within a parallel universe or in a different dimension, or who happen to be terrestrial time travelers. In other words, us from the future, perhaps. So that's a key point. They're saying that based on our current way of examining evidence, any of those hypotheses could actually fit. It would be very difficult, based on the data we have, to know which one it is. And of course, we should always consider the possibility that it might be more than one of those. And again, that's partly what makes this topic so fascinating, but also so daunting to try to make sense of. And of course, part of the point that Valet and Davis are making is that any of the groups proposing a certain hypothesis should demonstrate a certain humility because our current experimental paradigm can't distinguish which one of those possibilities it could be. It could be any or all or some of them. And so we should keep humility front and center as we proceed. All right, back to the paper. Quote, "Each of these interesting possibilities can be manifested via the application of the physical principle of traversable wormholes, since they theoretically connect between two different universes, two remote space locations, different times and dimensions. Traversable wormholes are but one example of new physical tools that are available for consideration of interuniversal, interstellar, interdimensional, or chronological travel," unquote. So the point that's being made there, again, is very interesting and we should pay attention. They're saying that traversable wormholes, which are believed to be a real thing, this is part of modern day physics, could be responsible for a kind of travel from any of those different hypotheses. Again, they said here, two different universes, two remote space locations, different times and dimensions. So any of the hypotheses we've talked about, whether it's future time travelers, whether it's interdimensional or whether it's extraterrestrial, wormholes could be used as a means of travel for each of those. All right, now returning to the paper, we're now moved to a section titled UAP, the need for a unified approach. Quote, "What we present here is a new framework for UAP analysis that takes into account the lessons from SETI. In any scientific question, it must be possible to ascertain to what extent a hypothesis, when tested and proven to be true, actually explains the observed facts. In the case of UAP, however, as in physics generally, a hypothesis may well be proven true, while an apparently contradictory hypothesis is also proven true. Thus, the hypothesis that the phenomenon of light is caused by particles is true, but so is the opposite hypothesis that it is caused by waves, we must be prepared for the time when we will be in a position to formulate scientific hypotheses for UAP, and then we may face a similar situation. The framework we present here is based on such an apparent contradiction, because we will argue that UAP can be thought of both as physical and as psychic. We hope that it will prove stimulating as a unified approach to a puzzling phenomenon that presents both undeniable physical effects, suggesting a technological device or craft, and psychic effects reminiscent of the literature on poltergeists and psychokinetic phenomena. Here we use the word psychic in the sense of an interaction between physical reality and human consciousness. As one example among many, it will be recalled that the events at Fatima involved luminous phenomena, atmospheric and thermal effects, and descriptions of an apparent metallic disk in the sky, while many of the 70,000 witnesses also experienced spiritual and psychological effects. The main percipients reported psychic states conductive to a form of extrasensory communication with a non-human entity assumed to be the Virgin Mary. The feeling of absurdity and contradiction in these two aspects is not worse than scientific puzzlement during the particle wave, or more recently, quantum entanglement and multidimensional transport controversies. The contradiction has to do with the inadequacy of our language to grasp a phenomenon that defies our attempts at classification. Unquote. Again, a key section, what they're pointing to is that the revelations from quantum experiments to do with particles and waves and quantum entanglement, etc., non-locality, all of these have been very puzzling to the scientific community. They look almost contradictory in terms of the data that arises from these experiments. And so what Davis and Vallée are saying is that in the same way we should approach the UFO phenomenon, we should try and think outside of the box and realize that ultimately this is no more challenging than some of the same challenges we're facing in physics. All right, now we're going to move to a section they call the six levels of UAP analysis. The first one, layer one, is, quote, first of all, is the physical layer, evident in most witness accounts describing an object that occupies a position in space consistent with geometry, moves as time passes, interacts with the environment through thermal effects, exhibits light absorption and emission from which power output estimates can be derived, produces turbulence, when landed, leaves indentations and burns from which mass and energy figures can be derived, gives rise to photographic images, leaves material residue consistent with Earth chemistry, and gives rise to electric, magnetic, and gravitational disturbances. So they're saying that's the physical layer. These are ways that these objects manifest in our consensus reality and can be measured in terms of their physical effect on the planet, on the atmosphere, etc. Layer two, they call antiphysical. Very interesting. Quote, layer two, for lack of an adequate term, we will call the second layer antiphysical. The variables are the same as those in the previous category, but they form patterns that conflict with those predicted by modern physics. Objects are described as physical and material, but they are also described as sinking into the ground, shrinking in size, growing larger, or changing shape on the spot, becoming fuzzy and transparent on the spot, dividing into two or more objects, several of them merging into one object at slow speed, disappearing at one point and appearing elsewhere instantaneously, remaining observable visually while not detected by radar, producing missing time or time dilation, producing topological inversion or space dilation. Object was estimated to be of small exterior size and volume, but witnesses saw a huge interior many times the exterior size, and appearing as balls of colored, intensely bright light under intelligent control. It is the presence of such descriptions that leads most academic scientists to reject the phenomenon as the product of hallucinations or hoaxes. Unquote. So again, what they're saying there is that because these supposed anti-physical effects, these things that supposedly can't happen based on our understanding of physics right now, many of the mainstream simply reject the data altogether and will not investigate it. Moving on to layer three, quote, layer three, the third layer has to do with the psychology of the witnesses and the social conditions that surround them. Human observers tend to see UAP while in their normal environment and in normal social groups. They perceive the objects as non-conventional, but they try to explain them away as common occurrences until faced with the inescapable conclusion that the object is truly unknown. All right, layer four, quote, layer four, physiological reactions are another significant level of information. The phenomenon is reported to cause effects perceived by humans as sounds, beeping, buzzing, humming, sharp piercing, whistling, swooshing, air rushing, loud, deafening, roaring, sound of a storm, etc. Vibrations, burns, partial paralysis, inability to move muscles, extreme heat or cold sensation, odors, powerful, sweet or strange fragrance, rotten eggs, sulfurous, pungent, musky, etc. Metallic taste, pricklings, temporary blindness when directly exposed to the object's light, nausea, bloody nose and or ears, severe headache, difficulty in breathing, loss of volition, severe drowsiness in the days following a close encounter. Layer 5, the fifth category of effects, can only be labeled psychic because it involves a class of phenomena commonly found in the literature of parapsychology, such as impressions of communication without a direct sensory channel, poltergeist phenomena, motions and sounds without a specific cause, outside the observed presence of a UAP, levitation of the witness or of objects and animals in the vicinity, maneuvers of a UAP appearing to anticipate the witness's thoughts, premonitory dreams or visions, personality changes promoting unusual abilities in the witness, healing. And finally, we have layer six. Quote, layer six, the sixth and last category could be called cultural. It is concerned with society's reactions to the reports, the way in which secondary effects, hoaxes, fiction and science fiction imagery, scientific theories, cover-up or exposure, media censorship or publicity, sensationalism, etc., become generated, and the attitude of members of a given culture towards the concepts that UAP observations appear to challenge. In the United States, the greatest impact of the phenomenon has been on general acceptance of the idea of life in space and a more limited but potentially very significant change in the popular concept of non-human intelligence. In earlier cultures, such as medieval Europe or Portugal in the early years of the 20th century, the cultural context of anomalous observations was strongly colored by religious beliefs. Unquote. And that's key there again. The contextual milieu has as much to do with what we do to make sense of these strange anomalous events as the events themselves. So in modern Western civilizations, we tend to think of space visitors, but as recently as a century ago, or depending on where you are on the Earth, still could be the case, they are interpreted as religious events. So what Valet and Davis are saying is that we need to pay attention to all six levels in order to make sense of this phenomenon. We need to pay attention to all the ways it is manifesting and changing our reality and changing the personalities of the witnesses even. All of that information is important to try and formulate an overarching hypothesis. And now I want to jump to the conclusion that they come to. This is the final section of the paper. Quote, modern engineering has made us familiar with display technologies that produce three-dimensional images with color, motion, and perspective through physical devices. We speculate that UAP are analogous to these display technologies, but utilize a wider range of variables to operate on the percipients and through them on human culture. The long time scale and the global nature of the effects make it difficult to test hypotheses involving such cultural effects. unquote. I want to jump out for a second there and again highlight this section because it's talking about the ultimate aim is perhaps to change human culture, to modify and cultivate human civilization. That's basically what's being discussed here. And this again touches on Valet's control system hypothesis to some degree. Getting back to this final section, quote, science fiction has familiarized us with the concept of machines or beings projecting an image of themselves that systematically confuses observers. One could imagine that UAP represent physical craft equipped with the means to interact both with the surrounding atmosphere and with the senses of observers in such a way as to convey a false image of their real nature. One could argue that such an object could use microwave devices to create perceptual hallucinations in the witnesses, including messages that are heard or seen by a single individual in a group. Even such a complex scheme, however, fails to explain all the reported effects and the subsequent behavior changes in close-range witnesses. We must assume something more, the triggering of deep-seated processes within their personality. The question then becomes, to what extent are these effects evidence of a purposeful action of the operators? To answer this question and to test more fully the hypothesis that UAP phenomena are both physical and psychic in nature, we need much better investigations, a greater upgrading of data quality, and a more informed analysis not only of the object being described, but of the impact of the observation on the witnesses and their social environment. In other words, we need to develop a multidisciplinary methodology that encompasses all six of the layers we have identified and can be applied to SETI as well as to UFO phenomena and close encounters with the entities associated with them. Such a methodology would open the way to the rational testing of hypotheses in an important domain that has been sorely neglected by mainstream science for too long. Unquote. So there you have it, an excellent paper, an excellent contribution, an important contribution to the study of the UFO phenomenon. And this is in some ways both a plea to the scientific establishment to get involved, to apply curiosity and cutting-edge technology and outside-the-box thinking in order to tackle what should be a topic of the most extreme interest to the scientific community. At least that's the perspective of true scientists like Jacques Vallée and Eric Davis. But before we sign off here, I just want to again highlight something that has been mentioned in this paper several times, and that is that rather than ignoring this data because it is inconvenient and doesn't seem to fit with our current model of reality, we should see this as an invitation to dream up models of reality that would make sense of this data. In other words, you can work in reverse. You can see phenomena arising, manifesting, that has been evidenced multiple times by many witnesses all across the world. And because you have strong evidence that this is objective data, this is really happening, you use that to then backtrack and conceive of metaphysical conceptions that would give rise to the kind of reality where those kinds of phenomena would indeed arise. That's the invitation, and from my point of view, Vallée and Davis are bang on in terms of that's where we do need to look. I don't see it just as an invitation. I think it's a necessity. I think the absurdity of the data demands that we look on that level. That's exactly what I've been doing. The book that I'm working on currently is tackling this topic from exactly that point of view. What kind of model of reality would give rise to these kinds of phenomena? Not just in the UFO phenomenon, but in parapsychology, in physics, etc. And one last point before we sign off for today, just a reminder that Point of Convergence now airs every second week, and in the in-between weeks, I will be joined by Nathan, aka A Waif Soul, to publish episodes of Liminal Frames. If you're listening on YouTube, you can get both of those on my YouTube channel, Exoacademian. And if you're listening on a podcast platform, you'll want to subscribe to both of those podcasts, both Point of Convergence and Liminal Frames. Liminal Frames, frame spelt with a PH. And on that note, we've come to the close of another edition of the Point of Convergence podcast. If you'd like to support this podcast, you can do so by going to patreon.com/exoacademian. And I do appreciate any patron support that is offered. But until next time, friends, from deep within the Blue Ridge Mountains of North Carolina, this is Exoacademian, signing out.